Welcome back to episode 3 in our special series, Advancing Nitrogen Smart from University of Minnesota Extension. I'm Jack Wilcox, University of Minnesota Extension Communications. Today we're talking about carryover nitrogen with Extension educator Brad Carlson and Extension Nutrient Management Specialist Dan Kaiser. Brad, there's been a lot of conversation about the concept of carryover nitrogen this year. Explain what carryover nitrogen is and why it's important to be aware of.
Well, Jack, it's not really a concept that we have dwelt on a lot over the long term, and the reason for that is nitrogen is prone to be lost to the environment. It naturally converts to nitrate, and then it's lost through water-based processes, whether either there's drainage through the soil profile or the soil is saturated, is lost into the air. So any nitrogen that's present, say, following last year's crop, if it was unused fertilizer or if it was left over from mineralized sources from last fall, last summer, you know, the data has kind of shown that on an annual basis, that's usually lost before the crop gets up and growing next year. So it's not something we normally look at assessing. And that being said, though, there always is some, I guess, what we would call a background level of nitrogen present in the soil. However, because our rate recommendations are based on actual rate trials, that's reflected in those rate trials. Whatever's there is part of what made up the yield and the nitrogen response in those fields. So there's no reason to try and calculate that or figure out what it is. It's just reflected in what the results are. Now, the key to that is that's kind of under average or typical conditions. So the question becomes, if the conditions aren't average or typical, then what should you do? And as I said before, the loss of nitrogen is water-based. And so if it's really wet, it's possible maybe we lost more than normal, meaning we might need higher rates of nitrogen than normal. If it's really dry, it's likely that it all just stayed in place. And so we would look at having a nitrogen credit. So the last 3 years have been exceptionally dry. And so we've talked about this now for 3 years in a row, that there could possibly be a nitrogen credit in place.
And Brad, I think that it's key what you talked about with our current rate recommendations is that there is a certain amount of assumed background nitrate values. We know that our soils will mineralize so much and they tend to maintain so much, and a lot of it's coming through mineralization towards the end of the growing season that's occurring, even though the crop's not actively taking up the nitrate. So when we talk about carryover nitrogen, really is the key here is amount that exceeds that natural background level. So we'll talk about this, I think, going forward, what conditions there might be. Certainly, you look at 2021, 2022, and 2023 being dry years, we know that there potentially is some greater carryover just because the crop may have not effectively utilized it.
Right. And so while we don't spend a lot of time dwelling about what the water holding capacity is in the soil profile, you know, most of our soils are probably going to hold 7-8 inches of water. And so if we look at the fact that the loss processes of nitrogen are water based, that starts when the soil becomes saturated. And so when it's really dry, you know, first we've got to get enough precipitation to saturate the soil. Then the excess starts coming in, either ponding it or in terms of moving it through the drain tile and leaching it. And so these last few years, now last year was a little odd because it did get really wet at the start of the growing season. And now this year, again, we're kind of dealing with a situation where we've started to get adequate precipitation. There's actually some parts of the state that have had some excess precip. So we're kind of back there again. However, we've barely just got back to field capacity in most places. We haven't probably seen a lot of loss. And so, you know, even though we're kind of at that starting point, that base level of total saturation, the odds that we lost a lot of last year's crop probably aren't real high.
And I think one thing to kind of go back and make clear is that if we look at a soil test for nitrogen, you can have both ammonium and nitrate analyzed. Our soils will maintain a certain level of ammonium. Those levels tend to be higher when you've had a recent applied fertilizer, because obviously we're applying the majority of our fertilizer. It's going into that ammonium form other than UAN, which has some nitrate. That you can measure both, but when we're talking about residual, really we're focusing mostly on nitrate. Because again, our soils, since we tend to nitrify quickly, is that the bulk of the nitrogen we have that the crops are utilizing are in the nitrate form. So that's really the main thing. if you are taking a soil sample, just to know that carryover nitrogen, that a lot of times we're focusing on nitrate itself.
Yeah, and the other, you know, the other element to this, of course, is that if we do have a lot of extra nitrogen in the soil profile, and then we go ahead and apply a full rate of nitrogen, we're buying fertilizer that we didn't necessarily need. But then, you know, in addition to that, because it may be in excess of the crop needs, we may be flushing it to the environment. And so if you look historically at years where we've had a drought, then following that, when it finally gets wet again, we've seen nitrate numbers in the Minnesota River spike. And so that represents that we kind of end up flushing that out of the system. So, you know, in an era when we're very concerned, society as a whole is very concerned about the amount of nitrate in water, you know, as an industry, we need to do a better job of accounting for how much nitrogen is still left in our soil and actually using it with by the crop instead of just going out and applying a full rate of fertilizer again, you know, and then taking the chance of losing it. You know, one of the data sets that we look at, you know, in addition to looking at the amount of nitrogen loss or in addition to the amount of nitrate in the river is also if we look at our drainage plots. Particularly, you know, we've got those drainage plots at Waseca. We've got some at Lamberton. You know, what we've seen throughout the 2000s and the 2010s is on average we see nitrogen losses when we're following best management practices of roughly about 10 pounds of nitrogen per acre, even if we don't apply any fertilizer, and that kind of represents that loss of that background or last year's nitrogen prior to this year's crop getting up and growing. And if we follow best management practices, those numbers go up to about 15 pounds per acre, or roughly about two-thirds of what we're losing is natural, not related to the fertilizer. However, we've got a data set that goes back from the years 1990 to 1993 from Lamberton. Dr. Giles Randall did the research, and that was coming out of the drought of the 1980s. And at that point, we really weren't adjusting our nitrogen rates lower following some of those catastrophic failures we had in some of those years. And we actually saw, in those cases, we saw nitrogen loss numbers that were closer to about 50 pounds per acre. And so we do actually have data that substantiates this. And so, you know, we've kind of looked at this now the last couple of years that has been dry. Some of our friends in industry have been supplying us with soil testing data. And so it is possible to do soil testing and credit for this if we need to.
And one of the things to remember when it comes to loss is that when we start talking about our recommended rates, as Brad said, is when we look at applying the optimal rate, we know that while there is a small increase for every pound of N we applied in terms of the potential for loss up to the point where we reach the optimal rate, it's when we exceed that when it becomes a problem. So that's when this talk of carryover nitrogen, I mean, if that nitrogen is indeed available, essentially it's just additional fertilizer that's out there in the field in excess of what you applied. So that's one of the questions when it comes to carryover. And some of the things I know, Brad, that you've looked at with some of the numbers that have been provided from some of the soil testing labs.
Yeah, and so if we take a look at what some of those numbers are, courtesy of Minnesota Valley Testing Labs has given us some of the summary data. We, of course, don't have individuals. Soil test results, but we have had in Minnesota, we have had recommendations for a pre-plant nitrate test, primarily in situations where it's corn on corn following a drought. Okay, so that's looking at basically unused fertilizer from last year, and in situations where there's a long-term manure history, and then again, particularly in drought. And, you know, the kind of what we're keying in here is the fact that, you know, if there's something left over from last year's corn crop when we're rotating to soybeans, well, we don't apply nitrogen to soybeans anyway. Now, you know, I had a farmer friend of mine ask this winter and said, well, should I be looking at this and changing to corn on corn? Well, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, it's way too late for that. You've already made those decisions. You know, however, you know, it probably was something at least to look for if you did think you had a significant amount of nitrogen left in the soil profile. So this research that went into this, I was actually a grad student I was an undergraduate. As an intern, I was pulling some of these soil samples that went into these recommendations at the time. And kind of what they discovered was, is there was enough noise in the data that they decided to go like stepwise. And so since the soil test is really only testing for nitrate. Where they start is six parts per million. So anything at six and below is considered to be kind of what that background level is. So we don't credit that stuff. And then these things gradiate all the way up to 18 parts per million based on the credit. Now that credit at 18 parts per million is 155 pounds of nitrogen per acre. Back when this came in place, that was kind of where our highest application recommendation was. Now we're in a situation where at the 0.1 price ratio, corn on corn, we may be looking as high as 195 pounds of nitrogen. So, Dan, you extrapolated the data and kind of ran the line out from where it was up to 24 parts per million soil test and looked at that as probably being a 205-pound nitrogen credit. What we saw in 2021 and 22 was 28-23%, you know, roughly about a fourth of the samples that went into MVTL in the fall that year had that 155-pound credit. However, this past year, that spiked up to 46%, or almost half of the samples that were submitted. And if we look at that last category, that where we have that 200-pound nitrogen credit, it was 30%. I mean, it was one-third of the samples that went in had a 200-pound nitrogen credit present based on that spring soil nitrate test. And so, you know, that's pretty significant. It's worth noting those aren't random samples. You know, those are people that sampled because they thought there could be a credit and they were looking for it. And, you know, so you go looking for something, you might very well find it. And that was kind of the case here. But it does kind of indicate what some of the potential of that was.
And I'm kind of curious, too, on how many of these numbers actually get used, because that's one of the things that we don't really know right now. I mean, how many growers are effectively utilizing this data to reduce their rates? If they aren't, really the big questions I have is why? I mean, is it just that overall fear that they're not accurate? Looking at some of the data we have, and I did this in southeastern Minnesota where we don't typically recommend a fall test. I had a site where the grower had manure, had cover crops, and the fall sample came back over 24 part per million. And I know just a fact, since we had nitrogen rate trials in that field that were non-responsive, that number is probably accurate with that. So it's one of the situations is, you know, trying to figure out what is the issue here and why we wouldn't want to use some of this data, because we do know there's some significant risk. Again, if we get situations where we get a lot of tile flow that, if it's there, it's going to flush out. I mean, that's one of the major issues.
And Dan, that was one of the, I actually had a conversation with somebody from a soil testing lab here not very long ago. And that was the exact point that he was making, was so few farmers are doing this pre-plant soil nitrate test primarily because they don't feel comfortable making the credit. So why bother going through the effort and getting the numbers?
And in some of what I look at this test is, and we'll talk more about it, the nice thing about it is it's a proactive test. You look at things like they might be using for their equip dollars, like the basal stock test. This is essentially a report card at the end of the season. I mean, I'm looking at what happened and there's nothing I can change at that point. So, I mean, I would rather see growers, if this was an option for them, to look at this, because I do have questions on the lower end with credits right now. I mean, it's one of the things we're looking at. So say you're in one of those lower categories, 10 ppm or less, how accurate that data is. I mean, that's one thing I don't know right now. But looking at it, I mean, even for the Southeast, I mean, taking a fall test and trying to find some of those fields that you might be 24 part per million or higher, I think there's some value in there, because you might just be able to get away with maybe a small starter rate in spring and just apply that and then find some other way to reassess in season, and some things we'll talk about here in a moment.
Right. And so if we look at the protocol for the tests that we recommend, it's based on a 24-inch soil sample. And so, because nitrate is mobile and it will move through the soil profile, you can't just take the top. It may be there and it may be deeper in the soil profile. And so, you know, the kicker on all this is that the recommendations are calibrated based on 24 inches. So even if you say, well, I don't want to do that, I'll just look at the top foot. Well, the recommendations are based on 2 feet, and realize that potentially your number would actually drop if you added that second foot, and therefore you may be overcrediting if you don't take that deep of a test.
And it might drop or it might go up. You don't know. I mean, it just depends on where the nitrate is. And that's one of the things that every once in a while I'll have a grower ask me. They have 6-inch samples where they run nitrate and the validity of that particular test. And I mean, really, I can't tell them a whole lot, because, again, it's based on a 2-foot sample. In most cases, consultants or retailers that are doing these samples, what they're taking is a 0-6. Then they'll take a separate 6-24-inch sample and run that for nitrate only. So you'd be looking at your top 6 inches for most of your PK lime. Maybe you're looking at some of your DTPA or metals. But you do that split so you have the profile down to 2 feet. Now, one of the key things on this nitrate test is this is in situations where we would expect residual nitrate. So if you're dealing with just a traditional corn-soybean rotation, no manure in the system, it'd be a situation where I just really wouldn't expect potential for residual nitrate. And if you're following with soybean anyway, I mean, soybean's a nitrogen utilizer. It's going to utilize the residual that's there. It's just if you're not supplying it, you don't let it compound by having that additional nitrogen on top of what's already there. So, I mean, that's one of the things that we do have in the recommendations is a nice flow chart that talks about situations with crops. If you're following alfalfa, it's not probably a good test because the alfalfa, as it's mineralizing, there's not going to be nitrate there, so it's not going to be accurate. If you're following soybean, manured situations would be a good opportunity to incorporate that in. If you're following corn, again, manured situations, or situations like 21, 22, 23, where we have where you have continuous corn, maybe not all the nitrogen you applied was utilized. There might be some potential for residual nitrate remaining in the fall. So it isn't something that you can use across all acres. I mean, certainly you can take it just to see. I mean, maybe if you've got cover crops in there, might be something you want to take if you're corn following soybean. But in general, it's really focusing on those situations where residual nitrate might be present.
Right. And Dan, I think that some of these really high numbers that we're seeing this year are the result of the fact we've had 3 dry years in a row. You know, normally we don't recommend taking it, you know, obviously when you're growing soybeans next year, who cares? You know, but in the case where you've got 3 years in a row, I mean, we're back around to where 2 years ago we may have had some leftover from a corn crop. And now it's been dry ever since, and it's still there. And so some of this might be have been building up for multiple years. There's really nothing wrong with taking the test. If you know it's going to be accurate. It's just a matter of whether you're likely to see anything. So it's extra effort and it's extra expense in situations where you probably wouldn't find anything. However, there's nothing wrong with doing it.
No, and the question always is timing, fall versus spring. I mean, long we've kind of held that. I mean, in some labs like AgVice will recommend going in after wheat, after it comes off the field and sampling early in the fall. I mean, realize the fact that numbers will change. I mean, we know that from research that you're not going to get the exact same number if you sample in fall versus the spring. And for South Central and Southeast, I mean, spring's probably better. But, you know, even if it does change, if you're looking at situations where you're 24 part per million plus, it's probably not going to change that much, and you're still in a situation where you could credit a lot of it. So in that case, if you're looking for these situations where you might have these really high nitrogen credits, I mean, I think fall, it's not the ideal option, but it's just, you know, it's good. At least you've got a number to go by. And that's what I think key is having a number to go by that I can make a decision before I apply nitrogen to the field, because once it's there, you can't take it out. The crop has to take it out. It's a thing that, you know, being proactive to me is better than being just full on reactive and trying to make corrections all the time in season.
Well, and really, I think the point to keep in mind is that number is accurate at the time it was tested. It's just a question of whether it's still accurate at the time the crop is up and needing nitrogen next year. And so from that standpoint, if you credited nitrogen and it was extraordinarily wet in between the time you took the sample, you know, and then say early June, you know, you can maybe figure that some of that nitrogen was then lost and you maybe need to come back and add a little bit more with a side dress application. But you know, the other aspect of this, and, you know, we talk about this sort of general rule of thumb that nitrate will move roughly about 6 inches deep for every inch of drainage. You know, when we've got capacity in the soil to hold 6 inches of precipitation, first, you know, when we've got that deficit following a drought, you know, first you got to get that 6 inches and get it to saturation. Then you got to get all that drainage. So, you know, the odds of it actually getting lost out the bottom, you know, in some of these dry years really isn't actually very high. And so, you know, in some of these circumstances, you know, I think it's okay to go ahead and take that test and then just kind of keep an eye on what the conditions are like since then.
And one thing that you will notice if you do take this test is that labs are going to report the data in pounds per acre. So what they typically do with the 2-foot test is they take a part per million, which is what the result comes back from the lab, and they multiply it by 8. So if you do get it in pounds per acre, if you want to look at some of our recommendations, because we don't recommend crediting down to the pound that direct conversion from PPM to pounds per acre. There are some crops, if you look at it, that will recommend just in the rate equations, like wheat. Sugar beet, I think, is different. They've got a table kind of similar to what corn does that we don't recommend down to the pound. Just realize the fact that that's what's happening. The labs are converting it. So, and then looking at your crops, I mean, if you are growing more than corn, if you're trying to use that number, there might be a different way in terms of what that number is used. The other state recommendations, I mean, I kind of like the fact that recommendations are local. You know, soils do go across state lines. So, well, we wouldn't recommend it, but I mean, it might be a good just for comparison if you have a recommendation that you want to look at Minnesota versus neighboring states, well, if you're on the border.
Yeah, the problem with that, Dan, is just simply whether they use different sampling protocol to develop their recommendations. You know, so if they're saying use a 1 foot sample and ours was a 2 foot sample and you took a 2 foot sample, and then they may not compare anymore. You know, so you do have to be careful about that.
And one thing I do want to make it clear is we do not recommend this test after fertilizer application. One time, I'll get questions every once in a while that growers will take samples to try to figure out how much of their nitrogen is remaining in the spring from fall applications using ammonium numbers, and we have no way to interpret those values. Fabian Fernandez has been looking at just total inorganic nitrogen, which would incorporate the ammonium and the nitrate, but it really, really no way to utilize that right now. So if you are looking at this test, essentially you need to be doing it before the fertilizer is applied. I mean, manure, and yeah, I'd still like to have it beforehand. But the ammonia value, since that ammonia is going to be there and it's going to convert to nitrate, it hasn't done it at that point. We just really have no idea what that number is. So looking at it, just focus on nitrate. Ammonium really is really not the key, and just make sure you take that sample before your fertilizer is applied.
Right, and similarly with manure. You know, we'll get that question of like, well, I made a manure application. Yeah, I had a manure test, but it was, you know, a year old, and we applied whatever rate, and I want to see how much nitrogen is out there. Let's go take a soil test. Not calibrated for that. It only is testing nitrate. You know, particularly with dairy manure, you know, a lot of that's in an organic form. You're not going to pick it up at all. And so this is not a test you can use for that purpose. You know, similarly, when we're talking like, say, a second year credit for manure, again, a lot of that's organic and it needs to get mineralized, you know, into ammonium and then to nitrate. It's not going to pick that up. So it's not usable for that purpose. So Dan mentioned the sugar beet test. I guess it's worth noting that the sugar beet test in Minnesota is in pounds per acre and it's for 4 feet deep. So you do need to be kind of careful if you send the sample in, you know, what you're asking for and what kind of results you get back. So just kind of be mindful of that. You know, as far as our credits are concerned, we talked about that already. You know, Dan mentioned the fact that he's pretty comfortable with some of those high numbers, maybe not so much on the low numbers, but that table is available at our nutrient management website that you can find on the internet. Tables don't go so well on podcasts, so I'm not going to go through with reading those. So, you know, I guess the probably the kicker for the beet test part, though, is if you do get that test back in pounds per acre, you know, kind of what John Lamb, our retired soil fertility specialist, told me was use about 60% of that number credit as far as the pounds per acre that it recommends.
Yeah, and that's for corn. I mean, if you're trying to convert from
correct
the beet rex to corn rex.
Right, that is correct. So now, as opposed to that, there's the pre-side dress nitrate test, which is taken during the growing season. So I know some farmers get kind of confused between the PPNT and PSNT, and we tend to rattle those terms off. But the PSNT is a side dress nitrate test, and that would be taken during the growing season. And typically, the way this technology has been suggested to be used in the past is you would apply some base rate, low rate of fertilizer, and then come back and see how much more you need to finish the crop off. And so it's kind of potentially a way to do variable rate fertilizer, or to just simply lower your rates based on what's going on in the growing season and so forth. And so this particular technology has been researched multiple times at the University of Minnesota, going back to the early 90s. And then Jeff Vetch and Ryan Miller and I did a project here about a decade ago, and it's being worked on again. You know, in the past, we've really had a hard time with calibrating those numbers to recommendations and coming up with a good correlation for those. You know, I think the key is, from a big picture standpoint, if you're going to use that, we still look at a 2-foot sample, kind of the same protocol. However, that may be changing. I guess we'll see about that, but that's what we've tried in the past.
Yeah, and you got to remember, a lot of this work was developed in Iowa. If you look at the pre-Cydrus nitrate tests, where a lot of the information comes from, because Alfred Blackmer, who did a lot of work down there, he was a nitrogen specialist at one point in time. They were looking at a 1-foot test. You're looking at collecting the sample in early June. By about the time the plant, you want to get it before the plants get about knee high. Then to interpret the test, really the challenge is, if we look at all of our data, it's what I call a qualitative test. It's a really good at telling me if I have enough, but if I have too little or below that point, really not as good at telling me how much I should be applying. And, you know, there are even situations where we can get those numbers that are below that, that we're still at adequate yield at the end of the season. What the recommendation is for now, if you look at the Iowa data, what they recommend is every ppm below 26 ppm, they recommend 7 pounds AN. That's one of the things we're looking at now. Because Fabian Fernandez was looking at that critical level. He's seeing actually it might be closer to 20. And that's where I'm looking at this test. If you're, 20 plus or 26 plus, I have some confidence, or a lot of confidence when it comes down to it, that you should have enough nitrogen to carry you through. And that's one of the things that, even if we stick with a 1-foot test on this, it's kind of one of the things I'm wondering if this is a good complement to the PPNT, is that I can flag some of these fields that have high levels early on, maybe apply a base rate, then come back in and reassess while it's still a point in time where I can apply nitrogen. I'm wondering if that would give growers more confidence in that system to use those PPNT numbers.
Sure.
Because that's one of the things that I think they do complement each other well. It's just getting a good handle on that, what we call that critical level, at that point in which yield is maximized. And that's really the big thing right now we're looking at, and then looking at some of these numbers for that rate recommendation, because that's really where there's a lot of interpretation involved, where it's not an exact science. Because you get below the critical level, there's a lot of questions in terms of what you should do.
And, part of the problem with this test, and this is kind of what we ran into when we did that study about a decade ago, we were going in and georeferencing. We were using a handheld GPS unit, and we were marking where the soil samples were coming from. And we were actually sampling twice. So we were going at V2 and V6. That was only roughly about 8 days apart. Corn grows really fast that time of year. And we were finding soil nitrate numbers that varied anyway from 180% to 18%. So anywhere from, it could have doubled, and it might only be, 1/5 of what it was 8 days ago. And so that's incredible inconsistency. Now, what we think the problem is that because these were corn on corn site, there's a lot of residue out there. And we know that the breakdown residue will actually pull nitrogen out of the soil. It's a process called immobilization. It doesn't mean it's gone or not there. However, it's not nitrate, and it's not being picked up by the test. And so, there is still this issue. If we take an in-season test and there is some interference, some immobilization interference because of decomposition of residue, it does make the interpretation of the results difficult. Now, the other thing that we ran into is the fact that the nitrogen cycle happens everywhere, and it'll happen in a plastic bag also. So you do need to be kind of careful with handling these samples when we're in season. It's been suggested that they be tested wet. In our particular trial, we were handling these samples. We were splitting them in half, and we were drying half of them and sending them to a conventional lab for a dry nitrate analysis, and the other half were being done wet. Some of the fields, they came up really nice on a one-to-one line, and then other ones, they kind of fell apart. And what we discovered was that the ones where they weren't tracking, they weren't coming back with the same numbers. In some cases, those soils were sealed in Ziploc bags, and they were allowed to get warm. And we ended up with denitrification of nitrogen in the Ziploc bag. And so it also brings home, that if you're doing these kinds of tests, the nitrogen cycle will happen. Be careful with how you're handling your samples.
Then I think moving forward with this, really the thing that I'd like to think about on this is, this is a tool that we could potentially use. And you think about in years like we look at 2024, where you have, not very strong commodity prices, but still nitrogen prices are relatively high. What it would mean if you could cut back significantly in some of these fields and reduce some of your application. That's really the key here is, this looking at tools is, we don't have many tools or looking at variable rate nitrogen. I think this might be one of them if we could kind of come up with a better set of guidelines. I mean, I think the guidelines we have good, but I'd like to be able to establish that some of these things will work. Because, I mean, some of the other options that are out there, I mean, it just doesn't really work so well, particularly if we look at aerial imaging. You know, we look at other types of management where it just doesn't seemingly help us predict in terms of what the overall rate we might be needing on a recommended basis. So that's really where I look at a lot of these things, is trying to get a good handle on some things that I can be proactive in my management instead of constantly being reactive. And, you know, some things, if you look at it, one of the things I will say with soil sampling is it is really important to do a good job, because I think the adage garbage in, garbage out is pretty apt here, is that if you just go out and just haphazardly take a sample, it's really not going to give you very good data. Now, do I have a general guidance on how many samples you should be taking? Say you want to take the pre-plant nitrate test. Not really. I mean, I think it'll depend on your field. One thing about nitrate is you can see a lot of just small-scale variability, but I think on a larger scale, I mean, we've done some testing in some fields that, you know, 5-10 acre areas that we've had have been pretty consistent. So, you know, I think zone sampling might work very well for a situation like this, but it does take some planning, and it's one of the things that, you know, if you are going to do it, just do a good job, because I think that's kind of the main thing with it. Is I see a lot of times people just kind of go out and just without a plan, and really having a plan is really the best thing you can do to make the most out of the time you're spending and the money you're spending on these types of things.
Well, and we're going to cover variable rate nitrogen in a lot of detail in a future podcast, but I think probably the last point, and it's really worth noting with this, is, you know, these are technologies intended to allow you to cut back on fertilizer. When you cut back on fertilizer, you're not going to increase your yield. Okay. The idea here, though, is that it's adequate amount of plant nutrition and you will maintain your yield. Okay. So, you know, that's what we're looking at. But do realize that your yield is not going to go up when you apply less nitrogen. So, you know, the I guess maybe the take home on this is, if you're going to do this, if you're going to take the time to do it and the expense to do it, follow the recommendations. Otherwise, you know, it's just money spent that, you know, that you didn't need to spend a lot of effort on, you know. And so that's kind of the last philosophical part of this. And, you know, and if you're not comfortable with it, maybe just try it in a small area, cut a field in half and try it there and see what you think, you know, and maybe not on your whole farm, but I think it's time we need to get going with some of these technologies that we have that allow us to reduce application rates in places where research is indicating we can do that.
Extension educator Brad Carlson and Extension Nutrient Management Specialist Dan Kaiser, thank you both very much.
Hey, thanks again.
Thank you.
If you have questions for either Brad or Dan, please email us at nutmgmt@umn.edu. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Advancing Nitrogen Smart is proud to be supported by the farm families of Minnesota and their Corn Checkoff investment through Minnesota Corn.